are the true benefits of having a sponsor license? Of course, there are costs involved, and yes, there is a compliance requirement to be a Home Office approved sponsor. But is it worth it? In today's episode, Ian is going to show you the breakdown of all the costs involved in becoming a sponsor license holder and employing an overseas worker under the skilled visa route. He's invited a care provider as guest in the show today to share her experience in going through the process of acquiring a sponsor license through to welcoming their first batch of international workers, which led them to recruit second time around after seeing the positive impact their decision brought to their business.
Connection Partners. Ian's Match.
Welcome to Connections.
Personal chef, teacher, nurse, life coach.
My name is Crow TV Fems.
Defender.
I have a land to defend.
Superhero. Different roles, one name. Mom. Now it's time to find her own superhero. Ian's Dom Care. Give her the care she deserves, when she needs it, where she needs it.
On the 10th of November 2021, The Guardian reported on 10th of November 2021 that the NHS is at breaking point and putting patients at high risk because of severe staff shortages, leaving hospitals, GP surgeries and A&E units. The number of people waiting for hospital treatment in England has hit a record high of 5.7 million as the NHS struggles to clear the backlog of care that has been worsened by the pandemic. Matthew Taylor, the chief executive of the NHS Confederation, said that the NHS currently has more than 90,000 vacancies. 40,000 to 50,000 out of these vacancies are nurses. Now, what's interesting is there's no data available as to the number of vacancies for senior carers and care assistants across the NHS and the residential homes and the community, you know, care at home. There's no data around that. But 90,000 vacancies alone, the NHS has got that vacancy. And Taylor, the chief executive, saying that the number one measure ministers could take now to stop the NHS plunging into crisis would be to provide emergency funding for social care. Really, that if there's additional funding available for health and social care, that somehow the crisis will be resolved? I don't think so, because even if you put, maybe the funding will help to a degree, but there are no healthcare workers in the UK. In the same report, The Guardian revealed that last month, the NHS was facing a mounting beds crisis because care homes with unprecedented staff shortages had to stop taking in patients from hospitals. So that the NHS beds crisis is now so serious that as many as one in five beds in some hospitals are occupied by patients who are medically fit to be discharged, but they are still being kept at the hospital. And the reason for that is in most cases, there is no care package available to enable them to leave hospital. Now, Taylor said that the required extra support for social care services should include more money to increase care assistants' wages to help fill staffing vacancies and to increase the staff fuel allowance so more people could be persuaded back into the sector. I'm not sure what I say. One of the ways in which we can solve the problem in the healthcare sector is to go international recruitment if you are a care provider. I've invited today a special guest. Her name is Michelle Niatito. She's a director of Multilink Care Management. And together, we are going to talk about if becoming a Home Office approved sponsor will somehow help tackle the problem or the healthcare crisis in the UK. How are you today, Michelle?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming today. How did you find coming here? Did you get on the train or Uber?
Yeah, I had to get the train, had to get an Uber. So it was a long journey, but I made it.
Okay. Now, tell us about Multilink Management Care Limited. Why and when was it established and your role in the company?
So my role currently, even though I sit on the director's board, I'm actually the acting assistant manager. So It was actually incorporated in March 2016. However, we actually started in September 2018 when we got our first tender in Gloucestershire because we were originally London-based.
Yeah.
But we didn't quite find any tenders that worked for us, so We packed up and went to Gloucester.
Right, so you registered the company in 2016.
Yes.
And at that time, you were in London.
Yes, we were in London.
And it took some time. It took about 2 years before you actually...
It took about 2 years because I think we were trying to find our feet on what we were going to do. Are we going to specialise in supported living or is it going to be specifically domiciliary or is it going to be specifically palliative domiciliary? So it was just a time of finding our feet and direction as to where the business was going to potentially go.
So what was happening between 2016 and 2018? Was it a lot of groundwork?
It was a lot of groundwork and the admin and things like that, as well as... Throughout that time as well, it was looking at tenders because we weren't new to the healthcare sector, but we were new to the business element of the healthcare sector. So we were still trying to figure out how you get tenders, how you approach local authorities. So at that point, it was just a lot of research and trying to get our foot in the door.
And that involved putting in applications for tenders?
Yeah, putting in applications for tenders and speaking to social workers, speaking to referral teams at various hospitals we knew in Surrey. And it just wasn't really what we were looking for. So we started looking on Proactis. That's how we came across the Gloucester one.
Okay. And so when you found the opportunity in Gloucester, so how long did it take for the tender process?
With the Gloucester process, it took just under a month for us to put in a tender application. And they actually did face-to-face interviews back then. Okay. And we went in and did the interview. And a day later, we were awarded the contract.
And was this towards the end of 2018?
Yes, this was in August 2018 because we went fully operational on the 1st of September.
1st of September 2018.
18, yes.
Is it to provide domiciliary care in Gloucestershire?
And
to supported living as well?
Yes, so everybody had to re-tender because obviously the pandemic happened and a lot of changes came in. So Gloucester decided to re-tender to its current providers and we actually got onto the new framework, which comprises of domiciliary care and supported living, complex and non-complex needs.
What's the reason behind setting up Multilink?
Well, Multilink is actually a family-run business. It was the brainchild of Priscilla, who's the care registered manager as well as the other director. She'd worked in healthcare for, I think, by the time we set it up, for close to 23 years. Mm-hmm. So she'd been a carer, a support worker, team leader, registered manager for other organisations, field supervisor. She'd pretty much done it all within the care sector rather than... within the care sector. And it was time where she felt she can't go any further with where she's got to so far in her career. The next stage is for her to maybe try and run her own care agency. So that's how it came about.
I'm not sure if I'm right, but your service is supposed to provide re-enablement or enablement and care at home of patients who are medically fit to be discharged from hospitals, right?
That's correct, yes.
And are you able to provide that service in the current climate?
We are. However, obviously, there are challenges, like you mentioned, some of the statistics I wasn't even aware of, so that was quite interesting. But yes, we are. That's essentially what we do.
So just to explain to our viewers and listeners. So, for example, can you explain that part of the process where Multilink starts providing care or packages of care to people being discharged from the hospital? How does that work?
So when you're a approved provider for a local authority, in our case is Gloucestershire, they come to you to say, we have X amount of packages and... these are the hours that you need to service these packages. Do you have any capacity? And when they mean capacity, they're referring to carers, senior carers, or nurses, if you've got obviously palliative domiciliary. And then we go back to them to say, yes, we can take three or four this week, or we can take however many, or we can take all of them.
Okay. So these are patients that needs to be discharged from the hospital.
Yes.
And obviously the hospital beds needs to be freed up, right?
Yes.
From the information that I read earlier, there is a gap where there are no care providers who are able to continue the care.
Yeah.
So that there's going to be hospital discharges.
Yes.
So is that true? And what's the problem? What do you think is the reason why?
It's a staffing issue, simple as. It's not because people want to stay in hospital or families don't want people to come back home, because if somebody's discharged medically fit to go back home with a care package, they still require that additional support at home. But if the care providers within that locality are all maximized to their capacity, there's nobody to take those people, and you end up with somebody staying in hospital for 4 months after discharge only because they can't go home. And assessment beds, which is the next step for maybe people who need to go get some extra care, there's nothing there either.
So what options do they have? Go to a nursing home?
That's if there is.
Receive care at home? Any other options, reablement options, care options available to patients being discharged?
I mean, obviously there's reablement, but reablement is only supposed to be a bridge between the care providers within the community and the hospital to say, we can take this package on for a week while you source a provider. That's how it used to work. Whereas now you've got reablement looking after clients in homes for close to 6 months because there isn't a care provider to take on that package.
So when you were awarded the tender or the contract in 2018 by Gloucestershire County Council, hooray, you got the contract, right? After a month. Or maybe if you take into account the two-year period that you've invested in doing the groundwork, trying to find what kind of service you really want to provide. That was a celebration time, wasn't it?
Yeah, most definitely, yeah.
But did you have any plan, or did you have any challenges, around staffing capacity at that time in 2018?
Even when I think back to it, We did, because initially when we went to Gloucester, they were very clear that it's one of the localities that's the hardest to find staff, given where it is.
Yeah.
So we obviously were like, being London based, obviously there's carers in London. We thought, yeah, that's fine. We'll be able to find carers. We can do the recruitment. But I believe we finally recruited our first full-time carer 2 months after having been in Gloucester. So it took us that long, 2 months.
And the second care, how long did it take you to get your second carer?
Second carer, I'd say 2 weeks after the first one.
And the third carer?
About another month.
Another month. And the fourth carer?
Give or take another 2-3 weeks, because they ended up being referrals, because we'd obviously gone to the job centre, we've gone to Indeed, we've gone to Reed, we've use the local magazines within the county. We'd pretty much done everything.
So after 12 months of training, right, delivering care packages, and how many staff did you manage to put together in your team?
Care staff. I'd say we had about five.
Within a year.
And one of them was bank, so obviously it's when and
it's
how.
It's
four full-time, yeah.
I don't think that's a profitable business at all for the first year.
No, not at all.
The company made a lot of losses.
Yeah.
And that's
it's not because
there's no available work. It's just that because there's difficulty finding carers.
Yeah.
So what have you done in terms of driving your recruitment campaign to attract carers? What did Multilink do?
During that period. Gloucester does recruitment days as well, so local colleges to speak to maybe apprentices who are interested into getting into health and social care. Mm-hmm. And that was one that we thought would be successful, but we only managed to hire an apprentice, and she was with us for about 6 months. And once she'd got her footing, she obviously moved to a care home, because that's the next stage. And like I said, it was pretty much everything you could possibly think of. We changed our website, actually.
Okay.
So we worked with an external marketing team. They changed our website. We pretty much did everything I think you can possibly do where recruitment is concerned. I don't think there isn't anything we didn't do. We even did leafleting, actually. So, yeah.
Right.
So.
Okay. So, and you had five staff, maybe six or seven, and including yourselves.
Including ourselves, yeah.
Give and take. How long did you have that number of staff in your company? 2 years?
I'd say close to 3 years.
Close to three years.
And it was a sort of a revolving door. Sometimes we'd go under the seven, then that would put me in the field on top of the admin. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd say we always fluctuated between five to seven for those 3 years.
Right. And I'm sure at some point you feel, is there anything else that could be done to solve this staffing issues?
It got to a point where I felt there wasn't anything that could be done, and I was ready to call it a day. So,
what about Priscilla? Was she ready?
She still wanted to keep going because obviously this was her dream. She wasn't ready to give up yet, but I was at a point where I just, no. I was like to her, it's been 3 years of the same thing. It's not really going to change unless we maybe go to, I don't know, Bristol or somewhere closer by where there's a city and there's more people, then maybe things can change that way.
You're thinking if you are in the city or if you are in a bigger city that you will have access to more staff, is that...
That was my thought process, because obviously having been London-based and having worked in healthcare as a carer sometimes in London, to me, it made sense to maybe try and go to a city because there's going to be more people naturally, but she wanted to position herself in Gloucester.
Well, other than not giving up, Priscilla, you know, other than not giving up, trying, you know, whatever is possible, if there's any solution available out there, is there anything else that made you guys keep going, like in terms of the value and that you deliver to the patients or to the clients?
A lot of it had to do with the relationships that we'd built with the clients, because obviously we couldn't grow and expand as quickly as we did. Our clients ended up being people that we know, we see on a weekly basis. Relationships were built. Mm-hmm. We had a very good rapport with the local council. So if they ever got any packages that they believed to either be a bit challenging, they'd bring us in because they've nicknamed us the turnaround team. So it was those relationships that we'd built with the community that kept Priscilla going, in essence, because to just walk away from something that she'd wanted to do for so long, and it was proving to be fruitful in other ways. It might not be what you'd want a business to be, but there was value in it, and we were providing a service to the local community that was really in need.
At the time, were you aware that you can actually do international recruitment?
No, not at all.
Okay, so when did you become aware of it first time?
She had a colleague of hers she'd worked with for many years, and for a whole year he'd been trying to get her to come to London and have a coffee and have a catch-up.
Okay.
And at every hurdle she'd say no because she's working. And I think one day he got frustrated and he said, "Have you actually tried Ian's?" And she said, "What's that?" Mm. That's how we found out about international recruitment of carers, and senior carers.
Okay, so in that conversation, it became clear to you that you can actually go international recruitment.
Yes.
And for you to do that, you need to apply for a sponsor license. What made you decide to apply for a sponsor license?
It was a conversation. I sat her down and I said to her, I'm going to try this, and if this doesn't work, then you can free me from this because we can't carry on like this. Then we both agreed that this is the last chance. If this works, great. If it doesn't work, we've both given our all.
Do you remember the total cost that incurred you and your business in securing your sponsor license?
I'd say just a little over 2,000, I believe.
Was it a long process?
No. From application to it being granted, I believe, and we did priority because we obviously wanted to get things moving, just under 3 weeks at the time.
Under 3 weeks.
Under 3 weeks, yes.
Right. Now, there are two stages in becoming a Home Office approved sponsor. If you are watching and listening, you probably are asking, what is a sponsor license? A sponsor license is permission that a business or an employer can get, if you are based in the UK, for you to be able to recruit overseas and bring migrants to work for you under occupations that are listed on the job occupation list. It's quite a long process, but having a sponsor license will allow you to do just that. For example, there is a shortage occupation list where the Home Office allows certain job types to be able to come under sponsorship, where it's going to become quicker for the whole process in terms of visa application compared to the other job types. Now, the sponsor license and the visa application of the migrants will cost... No, the sponsor license it will cost you £536 to apply for a sponsor license if you are a small organization. If you are a medium or a large organization, you will have to pay an application fee of £1,476. Now, once your sponsor license is granted, then the next stage in the process is then to submit a visa application for your chosen migrants. So you remember the process that you went through?
That we went through, yeah.
Right? Now, if once you've identified your migrants, there are additional costs that you need to pay. You are sponsoring a migrant for 3 years, because you're allowed to sponsor a migrant either for 3 years or 5 years. You will have to pay what's called immigration skills charge of £364 per year, total of £1,092 for 3 years, right? Now, if you are a large organization, you pay £3,000 per year. And then you assign a certificate of sponsorship and you'll have to pay £199. Once a certificate of sponsorship is assigned, this document is what the applicant is going to use to submit a visa application. The fee for that is £232 if you are sponsoring someone under the health and care visa. So care assistants and senior carers are considered to come under the health and care visa, which is only going to cost you £232. There's no fee to pay for the immigration health surcharge for 3 years. So the total, you're looking at about £4,000, including immigration skills charge and home office visa fee of the applicant, to be able to bring someone to join your care team. It's quite an investment, isn't it?
It is, especially
if you are a small business.
Yeah.
So to get a sponsor license, you're looking at spending about under £3,000to get your license. So when you get your license, valid for 4 years. So your license is valid until when?
2025?
When did you get? 2021?
Yes.
So per migrant, you're looking at spending around, I think, £3,000.
Yeah, that's correct.
Per migrant. Now, the question is, and of course, there are other costs involved, like flights,
relocation,
and then accommodation support and all that. So it's quite an investment, right? But is it worth it, Michelle, in your experience?
It is worth it, because obviously, like you've heard our story, our journey, we're a small business, so we decided to break it up into separate cohorts. So we got the first three in just to see how it's going to work. And within a matter of 2 weeks, our hours went up, because obviously we've got more staff who are permanent, and the turnaround was quite quick. Then we got another three in. So it depends, obviously, with the size of your business and how you want to scale and grow. However, for us, it's been worth it, most definitely.
So you tried recruiting three international workers, right? And how many hours each worker is doing at Multilink? Typically, 48 hours?
48.
48
our first cohort was 48 hours, 48-hour contracts.
So you had three in your first cohort?
Yes.
So 4 to 8 times three will be how much?
If you do maths.
4 to 8 times three. So that's an additional 144 hours a week.
Yes.
Right. And how long did it take you again to get the workers from start to finish? Because these workers are coming from, they came from overseas, right?
Yes, they all did. Okay. So you mean from when we started the applications to when they came?
Yeah, yeah. When you started interviewing them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the whole turnaround from interview to when?
To when they arrived with visas and all that.
If we take the 10-day quarantine out of it, because ours came through that process, I'd say it took us a turnaround time of 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yes.
And did you think, that is actually very fast, you know?
Yeah.
6 weeks, yeah? If you compare to everything that you've done in the last 2 years of looking for carers in the UK, 6 weeks is very, very fast, isn't it?
I mean, it's incomparable to three years of trying to recruit. So, yeah, 6 weeks is very fast.
Right. So within 6 weeks, that's from start to finish, getting the visa, arranging flights and everything, you were able to add how many hours again? 4 to 8 times three? That's 144 additional hours per week.
Yes.
What about the quality of, what about the onboarding? I'm sure it's quite different when you onboard someone from overseas in terms of...
It is quite different because there's a home office element that you have to ensure you meet, and there's obviously the CQC element of recruitment that you have to meet.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's admin involved like anything else. However, once you've got through the onboarding, you've got through the induction and they're out in the field working, it's not something that you could really think to yourself, oh, this is going to be a lot of work.
How long did it take for the business to realize that actually we are now getting returns from our investment?
I would say our invoices obviously went up significantly once they'd done a whole month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point I said to Priscilla, we can't sustain this because obviously we've now got more packages. People need days off. We need to get more in. And at that point, that's when I think the light bulb moment happened where we thought we've got to keep going now.
So how many weeks did it take for you to realize, let's do another campaign? 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I'd say within the third week.
Within the third week
of when, with the carers actually being in the field and going out to see clients, that's when we realized that three is not going to be sustainable because obviously we're now getting more packages because we have more people to service those. Mm-hmm. However, there needs to be a balance between work and life for the people that we've taken on board.
So is it a case of increasing your capacity for your weekly hours to increase and, of course, the revenue to increase?
Yeah.
In other words, there's so much hours available.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Right, so how many did you decide to recruit again in the second campaign?
In the second, we went for another three.
Okay.
And at that point, I thought I was finished.
And what was the turnaround time in the second batch?
The second batch, the quickest one we had, I believe, was 4 weeks from when I interviewed to them actually arriving.
So that means 48 hours times...
The second cohort came in on 40-hour contracts.
40-hour.
But still, yeah, it's still significant. It's a significant number.
So with six additional carers, you started to have to deliver how many hours weekly now, around about? 4 to 8 times six. So 200. Oh, yeah, so 288.
Yeah.
Did you stop there?
No.
Are you greedy?
I said I'd stop there. No, we didn't stop there.
Okay, why?
When you've worked at something for so long and so hard, and in the blink of an eye, it starts to finally make sense and it starts to change, why would you stop there? Because obviously our journey is probably not going to be like most care providers. They probably had staff, but other challenges. Oh. Mm-hmm. However, ours was staff, so... In, I'd say, the third year, it just clicked. So why stop there? So
you decided, okay, let's have more carers from overseas.
Yes.
So how many did you recruit the third time around?
The third time around, let me just think. I think it was another... It was two the third time around because we were coming up to Christmas. So it was two the third time around.
So that brought it to eight. Did you stop there?
No.
Oh. Oh,
no, of course not.
Again, why?
why? I think word got out to the local authority.
Oh, I like that.
Word got out to the local authority because one of the carers actually sort of made an impression. So they gave us a call and said, where are you getting these carers that keep coming through? So
we birthed them.
So we explained that, oh, we've got a Home Office approved license to obviously recruit internationally. Uh-huh. By the time the people come, they're trained, they go through... various online trainings. When they get here, they obviously go to the mandatory trainings.
Okay.
And they will be with us for 3 years. So once word got round, you had social workers you've never spoken to phoning you saying, we've heard you've got capacity. And I was like, we've got capacity, but not like that. So yeah, at that point we were like, well, we might as well keep going. So
you probably get emails or calls that go like, oh, urgent packages, we need some help.
Something's advertised now is coming from the hospital, but with the social worker saying, can you take this on? If you can take it on.
That's good for business.
Yeah, it's good for business to have that type of rapport with all the other agencies, because normally it goes through the channel, goes to the hospital, then it goes to the brokerage team, then it goes out to the providers. But at this point, you've got a social worker telling the hospital, call Multilink directly. If they take it, then I can sign off the paperwork. So,
And who takes the call if the social care worker calls?
They tend to come through to myself or our coordinator.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how is it different now when you take all these calls, you know?
Oh, so I'm...
You're excited to take
them. I'm excited, but sometimes I'm avoiding them because I don't want to say no.
Well, I tell you what.
Because I don't want to say
I'll
no.
I'll give you a... If you don't want to speak to some of them... You divert their call to my number. I'm serious. No, serious. That's a good idea. Isn't it? That, I'll give you my number. 07897.
I'll take it.
36962.
Literally, I'm
direct that to us. You go. You do some recording like, oop, I can't take the call. I forward you to Ian. and then the music will play. When my phone rings, go like this. This is my ringtone. I'm sorry, I'm unable to take your call right now. But if you want to carry on and wait on the line, your call is going to be transferred to Ian. And this is the ringtone.
I'll be like, Michelle, what's going on? But they'll stay on to find out clearly.
Until I take the call. Now, that's interesting. So at the moment, how many carers do you have now?
So 662. We've got 8. We've had 1 approval today.
Oh,
yeah, we've had 1 approval today. Right. And we had an offer letter go out yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got 4 interviews next week, Thursday, for a potential 3 more.
Without you telling me, because I can predict your numbers. So all that happened in the last 3 months?
In terms of when everybody started coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first cohort came in August of last year.
August, September, October, November, December, January. About 5 months, six months. So in the last 6 months, because you were taking it easily, conservatively, right? Now you have about 13. Okay, let's do some numbers. Guys, I need your calculator. Gloucestershire County Council is paying Michelle £30 an hour. Suppose, and I know they pay more than that. Suppose they're paying £30 an hour. One carer is doing 4 to 8 hours a week, and they have originally 6 plus 14. That's how many? 6 by 14 is 20, yeah? 20. You've got a capacity of 20 to deliver the hours. And if each is doing 4 to 8 hours a week, how many hours is that? 4 to 8 hours by 20 is how much? Give me the number, guys. 960 hours a week that you're delivering. Yeah, you're probably not there because you've got 3 coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when they get here, you're looking at how much? Okay, let's make this easy for everybody. So you have a potential of when your guys come, and the some of them, give them a little more hours than 4 to 8, you have a capacity of around 1,000 hours per week.
Yeah.
Would that be correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right? 1,000 hours per week. And if the council is paying Multilink £30 an hour, how much is that? Per week. That's £30,000 a week, right? Now, by 52, how much is that? 30,000 by 52 weeks, how much? 30,000 by 52. Yeah, 1.5 million, Michelle.
I mean, I haven't made those calculations, but gosh.
No.
I mean, obviously, sitting here hearing the numbers, I'm a bit like... Oh.
No. I mean, it's numbers are numbers, right? So you've increased your capacity to 1,000 hours a week, and the council is paying you £30 an hour or more. That means £30,000 of revenue in a week's time. Yeah? And then, in other words, you have a projected annual revenue of how much again? 1.5 million.
1.5 million, yeah.
Right? And that's, I think... A clear benefit of having a sponsor license, isn't it?
Yeah, speechless, really.
So you need to get an increase, you know, on Priscilla. Priscilla, come
yes,
on. Come on,
yes,
Priscilla.
I definitely do.
I need to see, you got, Priscilla, that's your microphone. This is my microphone. Let's do some math.
let's seriously sit down and talk about this.
No, but I think if you look at the numbers, and it's not rocket science, isn't it? You increase your capacity, and therefore you're able to grow your business.
Yeah.
And if you are able to provide care to the community, what happens to your community? What happens to the hospitals?
It eases the pressure off the hospitals, and there's more people that can be seen to, because obviously, as we know, people are missing appointments, appointments are getting pushed back because there's no beds.
So you need to be awarded by Gloucestershire, you know, because you're helping them free up their beds. Not just that, which is saving the country a lot of money, the NHS a lot of money, but also you're able to provide the care that the residents need in your community, not just during a short period, but for a long period
of time,
isn't it? Do you know how many years would each carer work for Multilink on the sponsorship?
On our sponsorship, it's 3 years.
3 years,
yeah.
So you're going to enjoy this number for the next 3 years, right? So let's multiply 1.5 million by 3 years. How much is it? That's 4.5 million, isn't it?
I need to talk to my accountant. I wasn't aware of these numbers at all.
No, seriously, Michelle, that's 4.5. So suddenly, Multilink has become a £1 million care provider.
Yeah.
And you don't need to invest in a massive property to build a care home, isn't it?
No.
Right? All you need are drivers and cars and car
people
insurance.
People that... Oh, jeez.
No, but you've not seen this, right?
Yeah.
Now you do.
Now I see it. No, obviously now you're calculating things. I'm a bit like, I really need to sit down with Priscilla.
You need to. No, because that will allow you then to start thinking about, okay, how much is enough, right? Let's say Tanya is here. Tanya, what kind of working relationship do you have with Michelle? So every time Michelle needs a 1.4, a 1.5, a 1.6, she talks to you. Is that right?
I badger her. Tanya, sometimes.
Has she been helpful?
Very helpful.
Does she know what she's doing?
Yes. Very helpful. Very helpful. No, she does.
Okay. What kind of the quality? Let's talk about the quality of candidates that you get from Ian's. Right?
The quality's been great because obviously with people that know about Ian's, the candidates already come trained. So some of them do either 3 months, a 3 month course, or some of them do up to 6 months. So the knowledge that they have is already very valuable by the time they come on board to work for a provider like ourselves in the UK. So they're familiar with certain things, even the way that they speak to clients. Because we had one of your candidates said, in our training, we were told not to call them mum or dad. We have to use their name, which is something that you'd think people would know, but they'd obviously make those mistakes. But they come trained with the littlest of things that you'd never think about, which is quite good.
And you don't get that from a regular recruitment agency?
No.
Really?
No, you don't, because if you get if you go to a recruitment agency, if they specialize in care, then obviously you're going to get what you require. But if they're just a blanket recruitment agency and they have a care desk, but they're not specific to health and social care, you might get people who are in between jobs or people who are trying to feel out the sector to see if it's for them. Mm-hmm. So they might not have that aspect of care to them.
In terms of retention, right? Obviously, some of them joined Multilink over the last 6 months. Are they still in Multilink?
Yes,
still
every working? Single one's
still. Are they still happy?
I'd like to think so, yeah. I'd like to think so. I can't speak for them, but the fact that they're still there is a good sign.
All right, okay. What about the kind of the culture and the blend and the diversity? That's what I'm looking for. The diversity of the candidates that you have.
With the ones that we have, we've got a few from actual healthcare backgrounds from wherever their home countries are. We've got some of them who've transitioned to healthcare who are actually starting a new journey in their careers.
Yeah.
And we've taken candidates from South Africa, Zimbabwe, Dubai, the Philippines. So it's a nice mix that we've got going. And at every stage, I say to Tanya, let's change it up a bit because we need to get a bit more of this because we've got too much of that. Because obviously personalities as well have to blend. You have to get people that work well together because if they don't, then it causes other issues.
Did it present any additional challenges in terms of onboarding them, settling them in to become part of the company?
No.
The fact that they are from overseas and...
No, it didn't. I think I built a good rapport with a landlord I found, so that's working really well, whereby they get really nice accommodation for 3 months, and if they want to move on, they can. If they don't, they stay. Most of them have stayed in the accommodation we found them because it is quite nice, it's comfortable. And yeah, so we've sort of paired them up as well because they've come in gradually.
Okay.
The first will help the second, and then they start to integrate each other into the community. And I guess for the first three, it was probably the hardest because I was finding my feet on how we do it all. But by the next batch, we've kind of been quite good with it.
Has Tanya given you...
What about service users? Do they feel comfortable with overseas health and care workers?
They do, because they're actually, obviously with services, as you know, most of them are at home all day, so they're watching the news. They probably know more before we do. So when we explained to them what we were doing, they were more than happy, and it's a talking point for them now.
Are they able to communicate efficiently with the service users?
Yes, they are. They all speak fluent English, because obviously without that, they can't. It's part of the requirements for their visas to be able to read and write English.
That's the due diligence we conduct before filing the visa. But you want to see practically efficient.
Yeah, practically they are. They're able to hold conversations, and one of them has actually built a really good rapport with a lot of I'd say about over 16 of our clients. They all want her to come to them, and like we say to them, she can't be in 16 places at once. So
and she said that some of the migrants are not from the health and care background, but because they are trained by ENS and they are doing good here. So do you also provide them professional training for their development that they maintain certain standards?
Yes.
Yes,
with us, obviously their training from Ian's is a minimum for us, but once they get to the UK, like I was saying, they have to meet their CQC standards. So we actually send them to the health and safety group for mandatory training, which would be your medication awareness, manual handling, food and nutrition, safeguarding of adults and children. So they actually do the standard mandatory training when they get here.
And all these workers are getting... all the salary benefits, annual leave, sick leave, everything.
Yes.
Like the local workers.
I like the local workers, yes. It's all part of their contract. Yes, they do.
Has Tanya given you any applicant on a student visa in the UK? Do you have any? Is it in the UK?
No, not yet.
So they're all from overseas?
Yes, so far they're all from overseas.
Right, okay. But are you aware that those who are in the UK on student visas are able to switch to a skilled worker visa?
I am aware of it. I am aware of it, but I don't think
we've
really searched that option yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm open to it. If somebody's in the UK, it's probably a lot quicker in terms of the turnaround time and flights and things like that. Mm-hmm.
Do you see any potential for senior positions from the team that you have now in terms of overseas candidates? Or is that something that you're looking to give them opportunity, further training, so they can take a more senior role?
We'd like them to at least do a year to really understand the field, because like Priscilla always says, up until you understand how to work with clients and their families, the next stage is to work with social workers and then marry the three up together to see how it really works. Mm-hmm. But we would like a team leader to come out of the senior carers that we currently have, because they'll understand the challenges of being out in the field to what needs to be done maybe once they get into the office. We wouldn't want to take an external candidate for that. We'd really like to nurture the people that we do have to see if a team leader comes out of that group.
Going back to the benefits. So if you look back, and now that you've actually got the senior carers and the carers in your team, after going through international recruitment, what do you think are the benefits in your business to having a sponsor license?
The biggest one I'd say is time, because we didn't have time to probably even sit down and have a chat with you. So time's been a big factor for us, where we can actually explore other opportunities as well as grow the business, because we weren't growing the business. It was just stagnant, realistically.
Right.
So, yeah, time and actually growing the business have been two of the biggest benefits we've had.
So if we go back to the numbers that we talked about earlier, if there is potential revenue of about £30,000 per week, so really, it will take maybe a week or two to cover and recoup all the expenses that you made in terms of sponsor license application, visa fees. And if you have that set of workers that will work for you as a sponsor for the next 3 years. It's a very, very good solution, isn't it, to a care provider who is in your similar situation to look into?
I mean, based on obviously the numbers we've worked out, even if you were to go down, I don't know, a third of that, it still makes a big difference because you're a third away from what you weren't even touching before that. So it's, I'd say it's a no-brainer, but obviously it's up to you, really.
Do you think you guys are branching out or going to another local authority or coming back to London or carry on with the supported living?
We actually had, let me just count them, three other contracts that in over the years that we actually obtained and we won, but we couldn't service those because we didn't have staff. So this year, my role is to really look out to branch into those local authorities.
And you've got contracts?
Yes, we've had three of them. I think we've had one since 2020 and two in 2021.
And these are domiciliary care?
Or they're supported living. They're supported living, yeah.
Right, okay. So when are you guys looking to start delivering that?
Hopefully in the second quarter. So now we're just getting in the last three or four for now, and then we can start to look at building the supported living, then start recruiting again for the supported living.
Do you think that with the value that you're getting out of international recruitment, do you think that in the next maybe 3-6 months or maybe the next year, you will continue in that trend of recruiting more and more, like 6 or 3 every month or every 2 months? Is that where the business is heading?
Most likely, yes, because like I said, I only wanted to stop at a certain number. But if we're going to keep growing and we have a shortage of healthcare workers in the UK, where else are we going to get them from? So the trend is obviously going to be us implementing a supported living once we see where we are, use your one or two agency staff while you bring in your care assistants internationally. Yeah.
Do you have a number to target for this year of the number of care assistants that you want to recruit?
No, only because last year I had a number and I went over it by six. So I'm not going to put a cap to it at this point. I'm just going to see how the business grows and what feels comfortable.
Interesting. Right, okay, so if I'm a care provider and I'm watching or listening to this show, what would you say to them in terms of making a decision to get a sponsor license and go international recruitment?
I'd say obviously look at what your challenges are, and staffing is always going to be one because I speak to other care providers and it seems that's the biggest issue most people have. Listen to a webinar, speak to the likes of Tanya Recruitment Consultants, get the information that you need and make a sound choice. Give it a try. Take one or two and see what difference that makes.
What do you love? Last question for you. What do you love about Ian's now?
I kind of feel like part of the team because every day I'm on the phone to somebody. So that's been a really good working relationship I've had with Ian's for the last year. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's changed our business, it's changed our trajectory. In essence, that's what it's done.
Awesome, right, okay. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm going to do another conclusion recording later on. I hope I got you to rethink and reconsider your recruitment strategy. Increasing your recruitment budget alone is never going to work. More open days, maybe? Forget them, actually. It's just going to be a complete waste of time. Agency workers, yeah, if you have deep pockets. But if you are serious in creating a solution, whether you are a care home or a home care provider, if you want a serious solution that works really fast, try Connection. All right, thank you, Michelle. I'm so low. My energy is so low. I don't like my performance today. But well done. You've done really well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
1.5 million. Oh my God.
Those figures are inflated.
That's a lot of money.
They are
Michelle.
Inflated.
Right? You need to get Michelle, you need to get Michelle to buy you another blue, another gray, silver.
Oh my God. You can get one. Connection Podcast.
Ian's Magic. Ian's Dumb Care. Care where you need it and when you need it.
Get the care your loved ones need now, not tomorrow and never later. What matters most is care that you can access for your loved ones. Contact us now on 020-391-20686.
Michelle is only one of the hundreds of care providers that tried it all. From paying job boards to asking help from recruitment agencies, Multilink didn't get the results they need until they turned to international recruitment as a last resort. But truth is, getting a sponsor license isn't their last option. It's the only solution. In just a few weeks, Michelle was able to change the trajectory of her business with the help of Ian's team. Want the same results? Connect with us at Connections. Talk to you next time.
Connecting people, changing lives. We are called Connect, yes, with opportunities.